All right, you intrepid Hurly-Burlyites. Today on the pod, the return of a Hurly-Burly OG. When we first had an inkling about what this podcast was going to be in 2017, we launched with our first guest ever, David Axelrod. Our second guest ever? Well, it was this man who was kind enough to take our call and say, yeah, what the fuck, let's do it. Nick Kouvalis said some shit that day on the pod. He was damned honest and damned refreshing. And his episode was a large part of what told us this thing could be successful. For those who didn't hear that show in those nascent days, and that was all but about 437 of you Hurly adopters, Nick is a super successful political consultant and strategist. Nick knows how to win elections. He's a principal at Campaign Research, a firm he co-founded in 2008. He managed Rob Ford's winning campaign in 2010, later becoming his chief of staff. And then he became chief strategist for John Tory's campaign to replace Ford in 2014, emerging with a victory over Rob's brother, Doug, who went on to become premier with, guess what, Nick Kouvalis' help. Nick was also a key advisor to Liberal Premier Christy Clark in the 2013 BC election. I know him to be a very smart, thoughtful, and loyal guy, and today I want to talk to Nick about what the hell's going on in Canadian politics. There have been a lot of votes shifting in the last 8 months or so, and I haven't heard terribly compelling explanations why, and that's what we're going to explore today. So, Nick, great to have you back on the show. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for having me back, and nice to see you again.
It's good to see you always. So let's get right into it. So there have been, as I said, votes moving over the course of since last summer, a long time, very close race between the Liberals and the Conservatives blew open, and the Conservatives now have very significant double digit lead over the Liberals that appears to be holding. So let me just very broadly ask you, what are the primary factors driving people's vote intention right now?
Just an ever shrinking supply of disposable income. That's really the key driver that I see.
Okay, and how's that manifesting itself? What do you mean?
Some people will say it a different way, but you know, people just have less extra money to spend or less money to save, or they're not saving, they're spending their savings, and that's just grinding on people. And I think you might appreciate this. I told this story yesterday in Toronto, but I haven't really told anyone other than Corey tonight, and then a group of people yesterday. So, in February, a year ago, the Liberals in Ontario, the federal Liberals, but in Ontario, the polling was done in Ontario, they were polling at 38 a year ago. And Doug Ford was polling at 42. And the 42 is important because I have never polled Doug Ford at 42 before until February of last year. So I always had him around 40 or 41. And in his election the year before, he got 41. Yeah. And I was off by a point. I had him at 40. So he was 40, at 42, and the Liberals are at 38 in February. And then by July, and this is important because before the Greenbelt stuff became public with the Auditor General's report in the beginning of August, the Liberals were at 30. They went down 8 points from February to the end of July. And the Tory and the PCs, the Ford PCs, went from 42 to 38. So both parties lost some support, the Liberals federally a lot more, before the Greenbelt, before all the scandals federally, the newer ones. And what was going on, the inflation was still up there. It was another year of higher inflation, prices just continually going up. People are frustrated. And so that's what I think it was happening. Now, I've done some research nationally, and I just don't do it as often as I do it in Ontario. But I do think that that's what's driving.
Right. And this lack of disposable income, Is this a recent phenomenon driven by high interest rates and high inflation, or is this something that's been building over time?
Well, I mean, I think that COVID, people spent a lot of money. Some people even thought it might be the end of the world, so they were spending new couch, new bed, new fence, and so that because they wanted to spend the money and upgrade all these. So everyone was, and interest rates were low, right? And so people were borrowing if they had to borrow. And then we came out of COVID and, everyone's got a brand new computer, an expensive one, a $3,000 smartphone or a $2,000 smartphone, Bell Satellite, Netflix, this and that. Everyone's just spending a lot more money. And so people are used to spending a lot. People like to have all the nice things here in Canada, in Western society. They all like to have the nice things. I saw this play out in Greece in 2008, 2009, and until now. And, in Greece, so half my mom's side of the family, all my cousins are university educated. And my dad's side of the family, all my cousins didn't go to school. They're all general laborers. And so the cousins who had better jobs and more money have downsized in 15 years. They went from a three-bedroom condo or a three-bedroom house to a two-bedroom house. They went from two cars to one car or from one car to no cars. And the poorer side of my family, they are used to being poor. And it's been really hard for them at certain points. And things in Greece are finally starting to turn around now, last couple of years.
Right.
But we didn't experience that here.
Right. That kind of retrenchment of our expectations. Right. So what do you think was the trigger for the collapse in Liberal support that's occurred over the... Well, you started seeing it last spring, I guess, in Ontario.
Yeah. I think... the Liberals have gone to three elections, and eventually people get tired of the current government. We saw that with Harper. That happens, and so that's part of it. I think people are having a hard time making ends meet, and they're frustrated. In my voter segments, the older suburban middle class group has gotten smaller, because people have left that group and they've moved into the angrier, less urban, over 35, anti-politician, anti-government, low SES. That group's gotten twice as big. It's grown, it's doubled in size. And it's a function of money and in lack of it.
Right. Right. So if that's the case, why doesn't the NDP benefit more than it does from a collapse in Liberal support? Why does it go to the right of the spectrum instead of to the left of the spectrum?
Well, that's a great question. In Ontario, when the Liberal support collapsed, the NDP went up. Federally, that's not working. And Jagmeet Singh just hasn't been able to do it. I really think. I think it's a leadership problem that they
have. A leadership problem, not an ideology problem.
Well, what is the NDP ideology? It's hard to even know. It's hard to, from Jagmeet's perspective, I know what I think it is and what they should be focused on to do better, but they're not. So I think the NDP has kind of lost its way federally. They have a leadership problem.
Well, let's just take an idea that they are proposing right now. So I presume that people that are voting for Poilievre hope that they'll pay less in taxes. Certainly they won't pay the carbon tax. Maybe he'll cut other taxes. But that's the kind of, gestalt you get from him. And the NDP are pushing things like pharmacare and dental care. So when you are struggling financially, why are you more interested in a tax cut than you are in free drugs and free dental care?
No, but I mean, I don't need dental care and I don't need health care, pharmacare. I don't need it, so I don't think about it. I have those benefits. I go to the dentist. It's covered by my plan. So I don't think about it like that. And I think a lot of Canadians have a plan for that stuff.
Right. Okay. So it's appealing for the people that aren't covered by something, but most people, it's just a lower priority because they don't think it's going to apply to them or they don't need it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. And then you look at that group of people that do need it and have heard about it and are thinking that they hope the government does it. And do they pay enough attention to recognize that this is Jagmeet Singh and the NDP, or is it the Liberal? Like, do they even know? Do they vote? And so I don't think it's enough. When you think about how many of those people there are that actually are paying attention and vote, probably not enough to move the needle.
So I took a stab at a short version just a second ago of what Poilievre represents to people. But what do you think people find in the Poilievre conservative message that is drawing them in?
The guy works hard. And he's like, you know, saying things, and he's connecting with people on a host of issues. I know I don't want you to fucking laugh at me, but like, I see hope when I look at him, right? Hope for a better future, for a better Canada, right? For a stronger Canada, both economically, militarily, the justice system being better.
Right. His numbers are not as good as the party's numbers. Why isn't he more popular?
I think his numbers are pretty good. His own numbers. So I think that, when you look at someone like Justin Trudeau or Doug Ford or maybe Legault, you know, only 4 or 5% of people would say they don't have an opinion. Everyone else seems to know enough about those people to make a choice whether they think they're doing a good job or a bad job, or if they have a favorable or unfavorable view of the person. But with respect to opposition leaders, there's a whole whack of people that don't know yet. So if we take those people out and we just look at the people that like him or don't like him, he's winning that fight. He's doing pretty good.
About even, isn't it, between approval and disapproval?
I think his approval is better. Yeah, I think his approval is a little bit better than even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you think his hard edge works with people? Do people find it appealing, or is it off-putting, or are there differences between who finds it appealing and off-putting? I'm interested that there's a gender gap with him, as there generally is with conservatives, but there is one with him. Take something like he goes after Trudeau and calls him somebody who spent most of his life engaging in horrible racist activities. Very hard, hard thing to say. How do you think people feel about his tone?
Yeah, so I don't know about that specific thing yesterday. So you're saying that he just was in front of a microphone and he said Trudeau's been a racist his whole life?
He was talking about the Online Harms Act that the government's talking about bringing in, and he said, I don't know why somebody who's been engaged in racist acts for most of his life would be telling us what's hate speech. Right?
Sounds to me like he's just trolling the reporters that were listening.
But, stepping away from that point, though, I mean, he has an edge to him. They don't portray it in the commercials, but it comes off of him, whether he's dealing with journalists or when he's confronted with any kind of pushback, he gets a little edgy. And I'm wondering how people react to that.
Yeah. I've known Pierre a long time and done his work and his writing for years. I see what you're saying as edgy. I just don't think the public sees him as that edgy.
Well, that's interesting.
I think that insiders, the political class, the media class, the business class, they may all have a view. Conservatives like them. Liberals don't. NDP don't. There's those swing voters in the middle, and he's winning them over. And part of it is him. right? You can't say it's all Justin Trudeau's fault.
Right.
Some of the fault is, in a positive way, is Pierre and his team, right? They've figured out how to use social media better. They're penetrating different marketplaces. They're getting a message out. I truly think it's a hopeful one. More houses, lower taxes, right? Criminals in jail.
Last time out in this space, you hurly-burlyites might remember I took you all for a metaphorical spin in a nearly now technology, self-driving vehicles. This week, we're talking about another industry quickly advancing into the autonomous space. AM is the shorthand for it. Autonomous mining, when you dig a little deeper. And yes, that will be the last of my mining puns for today. I hardly need to tell you how critical mining has always been to Canada's industrial success. But we all have the imagery in our heads, don't we? Miners descending into inhospitable environments, peril, an unwelcome part of the territory. Well, the entire industry is right on the cusp of a next-gen network revolution. With their superior coverage, ultra-low latency, and superior reliability, 5G and fiber networks will make it possible to automate so much of the old analog process, driving a myriad of remote operation possibilities. These are precisely the network technologies our presenting sponsor, TELUS, continues to invest billions in, with good reason. With more companies building battery plants in Canada, we need critical minerals to be mined as safely, efficiently, and productively as possible, with minimal impact on the environment. Here's an eye-opener. McKinsey estimates that by 2035, the age of smart mining will save mineral raw material producers between $290 and $390 billion annually. And as the world quickly approaches a future where industries in all sectors rely more and more on advanced networks to automate their work, Canada has a very real opportunity to position itself as a leader. But as I've been saying, the kind of multi-billion dollar investments it takes to get us to that place only happen under regulatory conditions that continue to make it all make fiscal sense. More next week. And those are the things that you think people are basically expecting from him and looking at him, and that's what's attractive, those three propositions?
Well, they think that he'll do a better job at it than Trudeau.
Right.
Right? You know, when you remember Christy Clark in 2013, right? You compare her to God, she was way behind. When you compared her to Adrian Dix, she shone like a star, right? So,
right. No, everything's relative in politics.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
So Trudeau's out of gas, it seems. Nobody's really listening to what he's saying anymore, it seems. No matter what they throw on the wall, doesn't seem to be working. And then they have all these gaffes and they have all these scandals. And you know, we don't even know about the ones that are coming down the line. We haven't found them out yet.
Do you think if interest rates go down and the economy picks up, that will help the Liberals get more competitive? Or, you know, we're seeing in the States that Biden is not getting credit for the economic growth in the United States. Maybe that's a unique thing based on his age or something. I'm wondering whether you think that as if the economy were to turn, things would get more competitive federally.
Yes and no. Yes, things could get better economically. And if they did, then yeah, I could see some people focusing on other issues and comparing the leaders, their choices on different issues. But no, in the sense that the economy is not going to get better. And the American economy, that's all bullshit, right? Because they go back 3 months later and they revise back 3 months ago. They said the jobs were 150,000. They said it's actually 15,000. That's all bullshit, and the bullshit will end after the next election. It's garbage. And, you know, Trudeau puts out an ad the other day and says, the economy is not numbers, it's people. And then the inflation rate is 2.9%. And they're like, the inflation rate is down to 2.9% within 12, like fucking 12 hours, right?
Right.
They're grasping at straws. It doesn't matter if the inflation rate goes down to 2% right now. The prices have gone up 20%. over 3 years. They're not right. coming down. They're not right. coming down. They might stay. Like chicken will never be $16 for four pieces. It will be $26 forever, if not more.
Right.
And so even if you, and you know, even if you continue to tell everyone the economy is great, we're creating all these jobs. People are looking at each other saying, really? Like who's getting the jobs? Who's getting the money?
So what is the politics behind that, Nick? Because the unemployment rate is what it is. It is historically low.
Mm-hmm.
And that normally means good times for the people in office, but it's not meaning that right now.
Yeah, no. So Janet Yellen in the States said, you know, don't worry about that. The wages are growing faster than the economy. And that's good news. Well, okay, I don't know. And then we have the other problem. And, you know, somebody who's listening to this will twist it and say that I blame the public. But, you know, you don't need a $2,000 brand new smartphone every 2 years. You don't need it. You don't need a brand new car. I've never bought a new car. Never. Still. A lot of people in Canada are used to having all the finer things. Spending too much money that they don't have to impress people they don't really care about. But it's cool because Instagram, right? So there's that problem too, right? So people are spending too much and don't have a lot of money. Then there's a whole bunch of people at the bottom who are doing like two jobs or three jobs at minimum wage. And that's just not able to pay the bills. The economy can grow. The stock market can go up. But it's not really impacting most people who are struggling with, you know, there's more month left than money.
Right. Right. Okay. Well, that takes me, one of the interesting phenomenons in this is that the Conservatives are looking like they're going to flip seats from the Liberals in suburban Canada, for instance, or in the GTA around Toronto and in the lower mainland of British Columbia. That's where they're going to pick up from the Liberals. But they also look like they're going to pick up from the NDP, ridings in northern Ontario, ridings in northern British Columbia, traditional working class ridings, resource extraction areas where people work with their hands, blue collar workers. And in some of those traditional NDP areas, they appear to be moving to the Conservatives. Why would the Conservatives be winning a fight for the working class with the NDP?
Look, and you've seen this in Ontario. And I think you would probably say we've done a great job with it. Though not every day is smooth. We've won over some of these working class folks with working class policies, raising the minimum wage way up from what normally happens, right?
Wait a second, we did that.
Wait a second, we did that. hey, you know what? Whoever wins gets to write history this day. So there's that. There's the skilled trades stuff. So private sector unions, right? When I look at the splits, they've really come over to the Conservatives, and Pierre's speaking to those people, right? He's talking to those people. He's saying, you know, we get you more support. We get more people into the trades, right? That message is penetrating, and there's still quite a stigma out there. Should I go to university? Should I go to trade school? Right. It still exists. And I think the Conservatives across the country have done a good job not looking like, you know, I mean, two of my kids are in skilled trades. The first one who's back at school, university, doing his master's in mathematics, you know, I have said to him 10 times, let's get you into a trade. Right. Anytime you're ready to go, let's go. So I think we just view it a little bit differently now.
Right. So there's a trendy name out there for speed, particularly in baseball. Cognoscenti used the term velo a clunky abbreviation of velocity. There is the velo of the pitched ball, which can come at the batter faster than 90 miles an hour. And there's the velo of the ball, once it cracks against a well-swung bat and abruptly changes direction. Velo is tracked by special radar, and baseball fans track the stats obsessively. You can go look it up. Pitchers are criticized when their velo drops by even a minuscule amount over a season. And it's not just baseball. Velo is a thoroughly modern metric. Our sponsor, CN, carefully monitors the velocity of its trains, although, you know, freight trains and baseballs are different things measured differently. In train parlance, velocity means the number of miles a train travels in an average day. The faster, the better. But boosting a train's velo doesn't mean stepping harder on the accelerator. You can't just do that. I mean, there are speed limits. Rather, it means ensuring there are fewer unnecessary pauses or slowdowns along the route, that lower priority trains have been shunted off to a siding to allow for quick passage, that the train spends less time sitting needlessly in stations, that all the train's navigational and safety systems are inspected and running perfectly. And of course, there's the big one, making sure the train leaves the station on time every time, period. Simple, right? But huge and crucial. CN has been relentlessly focusing on all those things in the past couple of years, and their train's velo is higher than it has been in many years. That means reliability, and reliability makes everybody happy. Shippers, customers, shareholders, investors, and CN's railroaders themselves. As I have said here many times before, cargo has to move, and you got to have velo. As we know from Thomas Frank and What's the Matter with Kansas, though, there's more to it than just economic messaging. There's also cultural messaging. And I found it interesting that yesterday, Poiliev waded into the transgender thing and with a couple of comments about how he didn't think that transgender men should be in women's washrooms and he didn't think that transgendered men should participate in women's sports. I don't want to talk about the substance of that with you. I don't even know what my own opinion is necessarily, but I'm interested that people are talking about it, and Scott Moe is talking about it, and Higgs is talking about it. Now, Ford is not talking about it, but yesterday, Poiliev decided to talk about it. And I just wonder for listeners whether you could talk a little bit, not necessarily even on this point, but more abstractly, about the way cultural issues like that, which affect a very tiny percent of the population, can swing votes among people who aren't affected by it.
Yeah, I think like the big one for me, I'm not sure it's the bathroom one, but the big one for me is the men who are becoming or have become women and are playing sports. That's on my mind. I talk about that with my network of, you know, non-political, just friends and family. It's just something that comes up, people talk about. So, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting topic. And I think that, you know, the public is split on. And so here, instead of talking about that issue, and because it's sensitive, and I don't want to offend anybody, let's change it, but still the same thing, concept. That highway 413, right? So there's one party that wants to build it, and everybody in the province knows that Doug Ford and the PCs want to build this highway. And then there's three parties that oppose it. And the support for the highway, before you tell them any details, is about 55%. And the opposition, before you give them any detail, about 25%. And then you give them the details, even the bad news about, you know, this species or that species of animal and this and that. You give them some of the negative stuff too. And the support is 50% and the opposition goes up to 35%. And so, you know, kind of makes sense what side you want to be on when you're thinking about getting votes. You want to be all alone swimming in the biggest pond and have all of your opponents swimming in the small pond and fighting over those same votes. Right. And I think this is the same thing, right? I don't want to say who's right and who's wrong about transgender issues, But the public is split. And all the parties are here, and Pierre stands over here. And I think that's why he decided to talk about
it. So I would say, but what I, one of the things I'm interested in, Nick, is how does it rise to the level of something that people would factor it in their vote? Because, you know, I mean, I would look at Canada and say, we got 99 problems, and that isn't one of them, right? But nonetheless, you can get people to fight about it and disagree about it to the extent that it becomes a vote-determining issue. I'm not, by the way, I'm not suggesting this is a conservative thing. Every party has these kind of cultural touchstones mm-hmm. that they use, right, that aren't necessarily important, right? Like day in, day out, Canadians don't think gun control is that important. But in the 2021 election, it was important, right? So how do those things that aren't really important rise to the level of importance in politics?
Yeah, so that issue, the transgender, that issue is not important when you look at the relative importance of 35 other issues. It's at the bottom. I don't think it's driving many votes. Right? But, you know, if you really believe, as Pierre does, like he wouldn't say something he didn't really believe, like he believes what he's talking about.
Right.
And you know that you are all alone and your opponents are all over here in a smaller pond, then, yeah, it's good to talk about those things. It's good to draw those contrasts. It's a good thing, right? I wish the election was like next week.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
I bet you do. Hey, when you look at the landscape of how things are shaping up and how Poilievre is positioning himself, do you see any vulnerabilities for the Conservatives?
Sure. I mean, there's one is we don't know when the election's going to be, right? It's supposed to be on October 2025, but who knows? It doesn't have to be. It could be in October 2026, or it could be next month. So there's that. The world's a crazy place. The war is going on. The economy's rickety. You know, you got two old bastards running for president. One's crazy. The other one probably can't make decisions and someone else is making them. The world's a crazy place. And you know, if we have another 2008 or worse, which is what seems to be cooking underneath, who knows what will happen.
Right.
Yeah, so that there's a lot of uncertainty there. Trudeau could quit.
I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah. And then that could change the whole world. So there's some uncertainty there. And then, you know, in anything, right, in any sport, in any, like, high-level top, you never want to peak too soon. And I don't think Pierre has peaked. I think he's going to go to 46, 47% in the polls. I really do. And it seems to me that that's where it's headed. Just because his vote ceiling is higher than, you know, it's higher than normal for conservatives. And so I think it's going there. And but you don't want to peak too soon either. And so there's that issue out there to think about. It's hard, right? It's really hard when you don't have all the levers of government. So, you know, Jenny is doing a great job.
They have more money than God, though.
Well, they have money. I don't know about more money than God. There's never enough money, right? We can find ways to spend that money. But there's a long time to the election. If the economy were to go like this, where would the money come from? And so There is that uncertainty. And like I said, Jenny's done a good job. His chief of staff's doing a good job. Pierre himself's doing a good, like, they got a really good team that they're building. They're focused and motivated. The caucus seems to be well under control. And I've made a comment or two before about, you know, do we really want 220 MPs? No. I would hate the idea of a caucus that big.
Right. Right. It's pretty hard to keep that together. Over much time. One thing, give the Conservatives some advice publicly. One thing that you can see coming down the road 100 miles away is that whenever liberals are running against conservatives who are promising to balance the budget, liberals raise the specter of spending cuts and what they'll mean. Because you and I know from our polling that balanced budgets are popular, cuts in spending are not popular, or tax increases. So balancing the budget's popular, but no way to get there is popular. What is the general approach you take to that? Do you like to give out more information about your platform in advance so that there isn't that hidden agenda allegation, or do you prefer to keep it abstract and theoretical?
Yeah, in this sense, and look at, I'm not advising here, so I can just tell you what I think.
Yeah.
In this sense, I would say Pierre's better off being accused of having a hidden agenda at this point. Because nobody believes the fucking thing that Trudeau says. So we would love for him to say shit no one believes. And not give away our plan. Because you give away good pieces of your plan and then the liberals enact it because they're the government and they can if they want to.
Right.
Like minimum wage, like how we did that in Ontario.
Oh, my God. So you talked about Trudeau quitting. What change do you, what impact do you think a change in liberal leadership would have?
I don't know. I mean, if you guys, I wouldn't even put you in this category because you wouldn't do this. But some of you guys, some people on your team would like want Melanie Joly to become prime minister. Well, that would be stupid, in my view.
She's very popular in Quebec.
Okay, great. How many seats are in Quebec?
Well, we need 40.
It depends who comes forward, but like I can't see who that person is going to be.
You don't see anybody with any juice?
Well, lots of people could have juice, right? Because when you got the Canadian media carrying your water for you, you can fucking do anything.
Come on.
Oh, my God. If you guys switch leaders, like if you guys could actually get Trudeau's ego to a place where like 18 of you could wrestle it down, if you could get him there and beat him up and got a new leader, oh, fuck, the Canadian media would just be like lining up, right? They'd be shining their boots and their belt buckles, coming to work.
National Post, Toronto Sun.
Huh?
National Post, Toronto Sun.
Well, I don't think the Toronto Sun, but the Post would too. They need the money.
Do you really have you really had your credibility, your credibility shaken in the Canadian media by the subsidy? Does that really affect your thinking about media?
I just watch how they jump on issues. And it's not a great business. A lot of good talent has left the business.
Right.
They don't get paid enough because there's no money to pay them enough. And so like the Oppo research that the guys used to do in the old days, 17 people looking through folders and that just doesn't happen anymore. And it's very partisan. It's very like black and white. Right. And so, look what's happening in Ontario with Bonnie Crombie. The media has decided she's the one, just like they did with Del Duca, right? I'm like literally going to caucus meetings, presenting polling, saying the Liberals probably won't even win 10 seats again. And outside of the caucus room, they're talking about how Del Duca can win the election. And I'm just told the caucus is like, this fucking guy is full of shit. Because the media is saying that Del Duca can win. And they've decided that Bonnie's the one in Ontario. They really want to pump her up. I think they're making a mistake. I think Stiles is the one to challenge Ford. I really do. But they won't let that happen. Bonnie will be the one. And that makes the challenge. And unfortunately for Bonnie Crombie, Trudeau's anchor is just so big and heavy. And she's going to have a hard time getting over 30.
Okay. So Trudeau's a big anchor on her in Ontario, but the provincial election is going to be after the federal election.
It could be, yeah.
David Peterson beat Frank Miller just months after Mulroney was elected. Mike Harris beat Lynn McLeod after Chrétien was elected. Do you think that Ontarians will be seeking a counterweight to to Pierre Poilievre by the time the next provincial election rolls around?
Well, if Doug Ford's government is pretty center, pretty middle of the road, they'll have their counterweight. That's one thought. I know that historically you have one level of government being one party, and then you have the counterweight in the province. I'm not so sure that will hold this time. Doug Ford has to lose a lot of seats to lose his majority. And there's still seats to be won that we don't have yet. There's still about five or six that are on my mind that I think we can win. So we'd have to lose even more to lose that majority. So I think we're picking up two or three new ones, mostly in the north, because for the reasons we talked about earlier. Will there be a switch? I don't think they'll be looking for a counterweight. It'll be a brand new Pierre Poilievre government. If they have their election in October 2025, then it will be a brand new Poilievre government that has a throne speech, probably in November, and then there's Christmas break, and then we're into the provincial election.
Right. Can you explain the Ontario polls to me? Because when Angus Reid does their regular provincial premier approval poll, Ford's numbers are not that good. Toward the bottom of the premiers, 30-something percent approval rating, high disapproval. The disapproval numbers, when I see polling on individual issues, the disapproval numbers on big issues like healthcare, etc., are huge. And yet he leads in the polls.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because the issues that people care about is who's protecting, growing the economy, who's rebuilding the economy, who's creating jobs, who's going to keep my taxes low. Those are the things that are really driving a lot of the voters. I don't think, I know in the bubble, people are like, oh my God, this Greenbelt scandal. But the fact of the matter is, we were at 38 before the Greenbelt stuff became public. We're still at 38.
Right.
And maybe 37, right? Maybe. Because I don't want to say 38 100%. I just had a poll come out that said 37. The Liberals are at 27. And a week or two ago, they were at 28 in Ontario, Bonnie and the Liberals. So about 27, 28, 37, 38. So we've actually lost some older women, especially around Mississauga.
Right.
And we've gained some younger people because of all of the moves he's trying to make on housing.
So, the Greenbelt, unless there's additional news to come out of it, probably is a spent political force. Healthcare doesn't seem to me that, though. Healthcare seems to me like that could take off in a provincial context. Do you not worry about that?
Yeah, I hope it does, but when Windsor West? We're building a hospital in Windsor, a new mega hospital.
No, but overall, the government is not seen as having done well on healthcare, and healthcare seems to me the kind of thing that's bubbling up to be a vote-determining issue.
So I don't think it's a vote-determining issue. I think it's an issue that is the most important, relatively speaking, on a list of 50 issues or 100. It is way up there and as an important issue. But when you look at drivers of vote, it's not. It's in the middle, right? There are other things that are driving votes.
It's mostly because people don't think anybody will fix it, right?
That's right. That they don't think anybody can fix it, right? So Bonnie Crombie's fancy scarf isn't going to fix the healthcare system.
Right. Now, you've got some...
Was that edgy enough?
Sure. Okay. Absolutely. Sure. I don't know where your numbers are at, but the numbers that are being released publicly would indicate that despite what you said about Stiles being better than Crombie, and I interviewed Marit Stiles, and I think she's quite impressive for what it's worth. But it does appear that the Liberals are beating the NDP in whatever you want to call it, the progressive primary, the urban primary. But the NDP certainly were unable to use the 8 years in which the Liberals were not even an official party in the legislature to cement themselves as the alternative to the Conservatives. Why is that?
They don't do a good job with the media, right? They just don't. They need to build better relationships with the media. The media is the one who decides who's going to be the competition to Ford. That the media is deciding that. And they're pushing that, right? They're pushing that because the polling, if Bonnie's at 27 and Del Duca was at 24 and Bonnie was the mayor of Mississauga and now Bonnie's doing much better in Mississauga than Del Duca, what else has changed in any part of the province? Nothing. The Liberals are still polling right around where Del Duca was, maybe 1 point higher than where Del Duca was. Why? Not because Ford's taking those votes, because the Green Party's up. And they're staying up.
Right.
And I suspect they're going to continue to stay up with older females, which is going to blunt the Liberal ability to have a comeback. And so the NDP doesn't spend enough time working the media and explaining all these things to the media, right? A smart NDP person would be listening to this, trying to understand what I'm saying, instead of just ignoring it because I'm a conservative. Because I listen to their shit to try to figure out what they're really thinking, right? Because they're not all stupid. Some of them are really smart, and they have some really interesting things to say, and maybe they haven't figured it all out, but I listen to them because I want to learn. And understand their perspective. But yeah, I think the number one problem with the NDP is they haven't done the work with the media to convince enough media that they're really the ones that can take Ford on.
You don't think that there's just some ceiling that they have? Like in 2018, when I had data, I thought at one point they might win.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the Ontario electorate took a look at that and turned away from it. And in 2022, they didn't take a serious look at it. And so I wonder whether there's something about the NDP in Ontario that they have a ceiling.
Yeah.
Or is it still a post-Ray hangover, or what is it?
Yeah, I mean, Olivia Chow just won in Toronto. You know, I don't think so. I think, you know, I want to correct something too. So in the 2018 campaign, I didn't play any type of strategic role. I just did vendor work. So I don't want, you gave me credit for that. I don't want to take that away from Corey. But I did do one thing in that campaign for strategy, right? Because I was doing some research of my own. And I was doing a lot of voter ID, so I was talking to a lot of people, or I knew what my call center was hearing from people. And so I called Corey with a few days left in the campaign, about a week, and I was like, what the fuck, man? Stop beating the shit out of the Liberals. The NDP is going to fucking beat us.
Right.
They're ahead of us right now. Turn whatever money we've got left on the fucking NDP. And we came out and did our whole the NDP hates poppies and all the stuff that we did, and it worked and we won. So the NDP can win. They can win. They struggle though with money, and the Liberals don't have official party status. So it's a long road. It's a long road to get back. And I know even some pollsters are coming out saying 35, 32 and, you know, 37, 30 and, yeah, that's all bunk polling bullshit, right? It's just nonsense.
It's not that close. It is not 30. It is not 37, 32 or anything like that.
35, 30. No. It's 37, 38, 27, 28. If let's just say that, you know, because I'm in the field every week, right? 45 weeks a year. Big samples.
I know. Okay, jealous.
Yeah, jealous. I love the work that I do. I'm good at it. Corey gets me the money, finds the ways for me to get the money to do the work. Mm-hmm. And I love him for that too. But yeah, no, it's not that close. But yeah, we definitely want to see Doug Ford's approval, his own job approval numbers, go from 37 back up to 39, 41. And that'll come with time. And I think it'll come this year, by the end of the year. We definitely want to see interest rates come down, so inflation come down, so people can get a little bit of breathing room, because they're starting potentially to blame us. Remember, Doug Ford went from 42 to 38 before the Greenbelt thing became really public. And you got to say, well, if it happened to the Liberals at this extent and it happened to us at a smaller extent, it's probably the same thing.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you, why are the things that are breaking Trudeau's back not breaking Ford's back?
Because Trudeau doesn't spend any time thinking about monetary policy. Right? And the Bank of Canada Governor General sits in front of a camera and says it's just going to be transition.
So right? You're saying no credibility on the economy, basically.
Really not. And the carbon tax keeps going up. Right? They're about to go. I cannot believe, David, like if the Liberals were smart, they wouldn't do the increase on April the 1st.
Well, don't talk to me about the carbon tax, man. It's a political killer, and it's been a looming time bomb from the second it was created. Right. So
Pierre Poilievre says something like,
It was only not unpopular as long as it was so small that people didn't know it existed. And once it became something of consequence, obviously people are opposed to it.
So. And in the middle of this period where inflation went up to 8, 9, and then it stayed at 6, and then it was at 5, and now it might be 2 or 3, and we're arguing about 2.8 or 2.9. Like, who fucking cares? Prices like chicken cost $26, and it used to cost $15. So people, like a lot of people, aren't eating chicken anymore. They're just not. And then the food banks. And so, you know, but here's the thing that really has got me this past few days. Poilievre says something like, the Justin Trudeau Liberals are taking billions and billions of your dollars to give it to these wealthy companies to build electric vehicles that nobody wants. He says that. And the Trudeau Liberals will respond saying, if we can land these deals here, we can build a generation of really high-paying jobs. And the tier 2 and the tier 3 and the multiplier effect, 7 times for every one job, you get 7 more in the auto sector. They'll make those arguments. And then their fucking minister stands up and says, we're not going to support any more roads or highways.
Right.
And 2 days later, the biggest fucking lobster you could find is being shoved into that fucking other guy's face on the other side of the world. Right? So yeah, people are just like, what's going on with these guys? We've got to get them out of there.
What are the politics of the EV plants? Leaving aside the politics of Guilbeau, which has been extensively curated on the Curse of Politics. What are the politics of those EV plants? Because I can see them going either way. I can see people seeing them as a strategic investment in the new economy and bringing lots of jobs, or I can see people seeing it as corporate welfare.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, right, it is easy to make the following argument. This is my argument, right? My argument is this. Perhaps everybody went a little too far with this whole every car on the planet will be electric like tomorrow. Or in no more natural gas by 2030 and those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, demand for electric cars around the world will continue to be at a certain level. Somebody's going to build those cars. Why not us? Why not us? When we've been building cars in this province forever, we have the lithium, the coal, we have all the stuff up north, right? We know how to build highways and we have lots of people who want to drive trucks. And we know how to put the shit on the trucks and drive it to the factories, which are all in Southern Ontario, right? And then we can build the batteries and build the cars and then sell those cars to the Americans. Some people will pay for them and buy them, right? It's not like we're building all those cars to replace all the gas cars in Canada. So that's the argument. You know, like I worked at Chrysler in 1999. So what's that? 24 years ago. Okay. And then 24 years ago, my starting salary was $34 an hour. 25 years ago. That's what I was making when I started at Chrysler after my 90-day probation. So, you know, I don't know what those guys are making today, but I got to believe it's 150 grand a year. Plus great pension, great benefits. Those are good jobs.
I think they're not as good as the one you had, because I think they introduced a two-tier pay structure, didn't they? A two-tier pay and benefit structure. And I think people that came after a certain point made less.
But yeah, they did. They did that when I was still there in 2006. They started to do the new hires would have like a 5-year period before they could reach the top wage, not reach it right away.
No.
And those car companies, Chrysler doesn't exist really anymore, right?
Stellantis.
But you know, Chrysler, GM had huge problems. They got bailed out by the Harper government because those jobs are important and they create a lot of other jobs in the communities. And Windsor is blessed to have, and Oshawa and Oakville, and like those places are blessed to have it. And now St. Thomas.
So this takes me to another question, which might be my last question, which would be, so desperate times call for desperate measures, and the federal Liberals are definitely desperate, right? Poilievre isn't giving them much to shoot at or fire at, but Danielle Smith does give them a lot to shoot at and fire at. Lots of stuff that Danielle Smith says, it's not mainstream thinking in Ontario. And then there's the whole issue of oil and gas and its role in Canada. And I know that outside of the prairies, the importance of oil and gas to the Canadian economy is not well understood. And the importance of oil and gas to individual people's standards of living is not terribly understood. So if a desperate Justin Trudeau decided, as Pierre Trudeau did in 1980, to win Ontario by running against Alberta, how would that go?
No one believes a thing he says anymore. Right? He just has said so many stupid things. He's been caught lying so many times. He does so many stupid things. His ministers do so many, like people have just, they're not listening. If he started getting in a fight with Alberta, I would just say, why does he hate women so much? Like that's, cause that's all I have to say. Cause people would look at him and say, yeah, this guy's got a problem with women. Cause they're all looking for a reason to say he's not good. Cause they've already come to the conclusion they want him out.
So that's an answer for why no strategy might work for Trudeau. But how do you think Ontarians would react if you put, for instance, Danielle Smith wants to kill the CPP in the window? Danielle Smith, you know, has these attitudes about the LGBTQ community. Danielle Smith says oil, we need to produce oil forever and not do the transition to cleaner forms of oil. How would Ontarians react to that kind of... And Pierre Poilievre is from Alberta, and he stands with her, and he's just like her.
Mm-hmm.
Does that message have any juice in it?
No. No, it'll hurt him more. It's desperate. Why? It's just desperate. It's desperate. Because Pierre Poilievre is a smart guy, and he's going to say, that fucker Putin, right? He cut out... They're not giving the gas anymore to Germany. And we could be giving it to them, but no, they're fucking buying it from Qatar, who's housing the leadership of Hamas. So our gas is ethical. Our oil is cleaner. Our processes are better than all of these fucking countries. And we should be making it here and create good jobs for the people of Western Canada. That's what he'll do.
I'm not sure that people in Ontario think that about the oil and gas industry, though.
They went for the drill baby drill to build the EVs here. Like they went for the, let's mine the shit out of the north and get all this shit out of the ground and get rich. They went for that.
Right. Right. It's different. It's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
They got to find a target somewhere. You got to run against somebody, right, Nick?
Yeah. No, Trudeau's got a big problem. And the best solution for the Liberal Party of Canada is for him to just resign. That is the best solution for the Liberal Party of Canada. I would even argue for democracy in Canada, because you want to have two parties who go at it hard and people decide, and then the winner wins and the loser sits in opposition. They're going to get trounced. You thought it was bad for Kim Campbell? Like, that's what I think is happening to the Liberals. It's going to get bad.
So, Nick, you know that Liberals listening to this podcast are going to say that fucking Couvallis is just a conservative. Mm-hmm. And he's underestimating Trudeau. Trudeau's been underestimated his whole mm-hmm. life. He mm-hmm. loves being underestimated. Mm-hmm. And Trudeau's got great campaign skills. Trudeau's a great retail politician. Trudeau is going to, when we get to the election campaign, campaign Poilievre into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you say?
To them?
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck. Like, fine. Good luck. I don't know how they can conclude that. I mean, I know some Liberals. Well, I know a lot of them will say you can't listen to anything.
Jenny used to call him a unicorn when she was on The Curse of Politics. Jenny used to say the guy's a political phenom.
Yeah, he was. He was. He fucking said, look, he's genius. He said, guys, I will make pot legal. And he went from third to first. And he won a majority government. Okay, he hasn't won a majority government again.
I don't think that's why he won, by the way. I think he won because people liked him a lot more than they liked Mulcair. Somebody was going to beat Harper, and I think people said, I'd rather it be Trudeau than Mulcair.
Mulcair was a problem, but like, I'm going to make marijuana legal. Like, it's not going to be criminal anymore. Like, that was great, right?
It was a good idea, but I don't think it explains the victory. Yeah.
I do. I think it's a big reason why he had a chance, because he was in third. People who hated Harper will go with whoever they had to go with to beat Harper, and that was Mulcair.
Right.
All of a sudden, Trudeau was back in the game. And you know what? He was a phenom, and he is, he was a good politician, right? I mean, look at him. He's like 6 foot fucking five and good looking and, you know, got a great smile, right? He's just a dummy, though, and everyone's figured it out now.
All right. Nick, thanks for this. This was great. And
I'm sorry. I'm going to apologize. I'm sorry, because you're going to take a lot of shit from the Liberals for doing this podcast with me. I know you don't give a fuck. And there's a lot of conservatives who say I'm a liberal. And so I don't give a fuck either. And we like each other. And I have a lot of respect for you. I'm so happy to see all your success with your podcasts. And I love watching Scott Reed and Corey and you. I used to love watching Jenny when she was on the show. Yeah. And anyway, you guys are great.
Nick, thanks a lot. And I hold you in very high regard, too. And I hold your skills in extremely high regard. Thanks for coming on, because we do want this to be the place where politics is discussed, not where liberal politics is discussed, but where politics is discussed. So thanks for coming on and helping to make that vision true. I need to thank our presenting sponsor, TELUS, and our sponsor, CN Rail. All you Hurly-Burlyites, thanks for watching or listening. And a special thanks to Nick Couvallis, who took some time out from killing his political opponents to come here and share some wisdom with us. Nick, I'm going to take you up on that offer to go to Greece someday. I really will.
I'm leaving on May the 2nd.
All right, I'll look at my calendar. That might be a bit tight this time, but I will catch you.
I'm going to be there until I don't know when, but probably a while. So you can come anytime you want.
Okay, thanks, brother. Thanks for coming on. See you later.
Take care. Hurly-burly. Hurly-burly. Oh, hurly-burly. Hurly-burly. Hurly-burly.